driving. Bill Lane crosses up Van Vliet. Okie doke move and lays it up for two. Lee with a nifty move there.
He could go all the way, and the freshman takes it to the house with no time on the clock. Are you kidding me? He takes it 60 yards. Welcome to Redbird Nation.
And the shoe. She gives it to Katie Broadway. Broadway taking it herself down the left side. No good. But she's going to get on a rebound. Kicks it out. Kansas Sykes for three. No, it's good.
She got it.
Kansas Sykes for three.
From local high school action to the birds and the pros, with live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion, WZND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now, only on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Red Zone podcast from, once again, our living residences here in Bloomington Normal. Anthony Ferretti, Joey Dwyer, Leo Stauder with you guys once again for this episode. And we got a hat trick of Zoom shows that we've done, boys.
I feel bad, gentlemen. I didn't make my bed before this, and I'm like looking in the background right now, and it looks like I just sleep on a top sheet. So I would like to apologize for anybody watching on YouTube, because that's a rough look. But this is, like Anthony was saying before the start of the show, fingers crossed, this is our last Zoom show that we're going to have to do. So fingers crossed.
Yeah, in anticipation of similar things to you, Joey, so people won't have to see my messy room, I actually turned my desk around so that you could see as little of my room as possible. So I'm doing that for you, the viewers.
I've just got too many pint glasses. Like, I've got, I think, six of these bad boys just sitting on my desk right now. So to move would be a risky operation.
I gotcha. Yeah, I've just got my AC and stuff behind me, and that's just my Swiffer, that green thing.
Keeping it clean. Keeping it frosty.
Got to keep it clean. So we have another great show planned for you guys. Tonight we're going to start off with the NBA playoffs as it's into the second round. Then we're going to talk about college football. Some teams are playing, some teams aren't. Redbirds still making some changes even though they're off. Then we finally get into the NFL season as that will kick off shortly on Thursday night, and then the moment everyone has been waiting for, the pick six first week.
I'm excited.
This will be fun. We're all waiting for it. I know Steve's excited to get in this. He's always looking forward to trying to beat us every week. So we'll see what happens this first week.
I think in my lone guest appearance last year, I went like 2-4. So I guess the only way I can go is up. So we're optimistic about that.
And we were talking earlier, and we'll get into this more when we get to the pick six. But we were talking earlier in the week how Steve's going to start off with an immediate 0-1 because he's going to pick the Lions to beat the Bears, which just won't happen. And we'll talk about that later, I'm sure. But just
we
a little. Because Blake is coming on later, and he's a Packers fan, if I'm not mistaken. So
I think he is. So we got 3/4 of the NFC North that's going to be represented.
Yeah. And, I mean, the Vikings don't have many fans to begin with, especially not in Central Illinois.
Yeah. Do have that ISU connection, though, with Mike Zimmer. But like Joey said, enough of the NFL. We'll get to that later in the show. We're going to start with the NBA playoffs. They are in the second round. Joey, like you mentioned last week, you called it with the Miami Heat starting to explode, and something I don't think a ton of people expected. They upset the Milwaukee Bucks in five. I think a big part of that, though, Giannis Antetokounmpo out in game five.
And what I will say about that is, I think Giannis or not, I really don't think that Milwaukee stood a chance. They play a super old style of ball. They just always drive to the big man. And people have been talking about this on Twitter, calling Giannis a Pippen and who needs a Jordan. And I don't necessarily think that's true, but he does need somebody who can hit shots from the outside more consistently than Chris Middleton. or Bledsoe can. So I think until they figure that out, the Bucks aren't going to be able to take that next step to where they can really be like this championship contender team. And I think the Heat are just a super well-rounded team. We'll see who they play. Huge, huge game tonight. The Raptors hung on a double OT to force a game seven against the Celtics. So that's going to be a fun game seven to watch.
Yeah, you brought it up with Joey about the Bucks playing maybe the wrong style of basketball, where they kind of just rely on that driving to the net. I think ever since the Golden State Warriors basically changed the game, where in playoff basketball, three-point shooting matters more and more, and the Bucks just don't have as many options for those shooting teams. So when you fall behind early in the games, it's harder to make up some of that ground. And we saw that with Miami, where they were just able to take the lead early and then just play with confidence when they had that early lead and didn't really let their foot off the gas.
I think a big thing with the Miami Heat is trying to test their depth that they have. You got Tyler Harrow, Jimmy Butler, all those guys trying to step up, make scoring for them. But you mentioned with the Bucks, you know, with Giannis trying to find, you know, the Jordan to his Pippen, it could be that way, but you don't really want to rely on just your one big man to score. You really want to try and spread the ball out to as many people as you can, not just rely on him, because that'll put you in trouble. And as we saw, Miami shut that down real quick.
And move it over to the other Eastern Conference series that I mentioned just a little bit earlier. I want to get your boys' opinions on the Raptors, because a lot of people were counting them out. The Celtics on paper are far and away the more talented team, but people forget that these are the defending champs, whether or not they have Kawhi with them. And you saw tonight that Kyle Lowry absolutely balled out, went for 33 points. They got Norm Powell giving 23 off the bench. So this team has still got the depth and they've still got the skill, maybe without that like focal piece, but still they are a very good team. And I just heading into this game seven and then to the next series, whoever wins against the Heat, I want to know what you guys see coming out of the East.
Yeah, talking a little bit about the Raptors, maybe it's because I've been binge-watching The Last Dance, but it kind of reminds me of what they talked about with the 93-94 Bulls that first year after Jordan left, where since they didn't have that – obviously the Bulls had Pippen, but the Raptors don't have that star player comparable to – Kawhi now, but so now it just puts more of an emphasis on the team and on the system. And so these role players that were on the championship last year have elevated their performance. And obviously it's just showing that the team is greater than the individual in the case of the Toronto Raptors. And they're not going down easy. We've seen they're taking a more talented team down to the brink.
Yeah. I mean, we've seen with the Raptors, with them getting rid of Kawhi Leonard, but we've seen some of the guys step up. You got Van Fleet, he stepped up. He had 23 points. Kyle Lowry, 33 points. Pascal Siakam didn't have the best game, 12 points, but he's still trying to make his presence felt. Ibaka, as you mentioned, Joey Powell, too. So they're getting guys that can really play to try and get them one step closer to not, like, count them out. So they're trying to face adversity the best they can.
And I think that going into this game seven, they got to make sure they keep manufacturing those chances for those powerful guys on their offense. Obviously, Pascal Siakam is one of the most promising young players in the league right now. And so I'm not super concerned about him having a down game in game six. I think that he's had a good enough series where I feel like the Celtics are probably keying in on him a little bit. So maybe spread it out to some of the other guys. But in order for Toronto to win this, they're going to have to shut down the superstars that the Celtics have, the Jason Tatums, Jaylen Browns. And so it'll be a super interesting game seven. And then even more interesting will be that Eastern Conference final. And whoever wins this series are going to have to go on to play the Heat. And that's going to be, regardless of which team wins, that's going to be a very interesting Eastern Conference final.
Yeah, I feel like when everybody was looking at the playoff bracket before it started, everybody kind of just wrote off the East. Like, they thought it was just going to be the Bucks and nobody else mattered, that the West is so much better. But I've actually found it that the Eastern Conference matchups have been more entertaining so far. I think regardless of who makes it out of the East, it's going to be a scrappy final, because these teams in the East have been playing so much closer, so much, much closer games, and they've been playing with a lot more intensity in the West, where there's been a lot of blowouts and a lot of not as many seven-game series. So I think the East is definitely conditioning themselves to maybe challenge the West for whoever makes it to the finals.
And it'll be exciting. As of recording right now, we've got the Clippers are up 2-1 on the Nuggets. I'm just making sure that that's accurate. They're playing right now. Clippers are up 50-48 as we record. So obviously tomorrow you guys will know who won. But the Nuggets have been putting on a little bit of a show. So that's been fun to watch. Murray has been just absolutely incredible for them, especially since Jokic has had kind of a down couple of series in the playoffs. So it's nice to see them have somebody else who can take the offensive load. But the Clippers are just so good. I don't know if Denver is up to the task.
Yeah, you mentioned it. Clippers, they do have strength. They got Kawhi from Toronto. I believe PG-13 is on the Clippers as well, Paul George.
Yes, sir. Playoff P right there.
So they've got some big men they're trying to test. They've got a bunch more cast of characters. But as you mentioned with Denver, Jamal Murray really helped this team out. You saw it in the first round against the Jazz in game 6, their team facing elimination. He goes up, puts 50, gets them into a game 7, and then gets them into the second round. So it'll be interesting to see if Denver is up to the task. It's going to be a dogfight. It's going to be entertaining in the West to see how that semifinal will be won.
Definitely. And I just feel like the thing that I noticed the most about watching the Clippers play is just how much of an impactful player Kawhi Leonard is in the playoffs, just because he is a force on both ends of the court. We've seen him pretty much going up head-to-head with Jamal Murray, and it's just the Murray is doing everything he can, but Kawhi is just so good, such a good lockdown defender, and then turns it into offense too. Like, he is just dominant on both ends of the court, and I feel like just there is no answer for that. Obviously, maybe the other team that plays in Los Angeles might have an answer for him, but Kawhi is just a special player, and it takes a lot to shut him down.
And you mentioned the Lakers, and their series against Houston has been awesome to watch, because everybody's talking about how it's the big ball Lakers against the small ball playing Houston Rockets, and the fact that Houston will field an entire five who are 6'6" and under and still can cut around and cut up through the Lakers. That's been really fun. But I think this series is going to come down to depth, and I just think the Lakers have it in droves, whereas the Rockets are really, really top heavy.
Yeah, definitely. And I think the Rockets are going under the theory of positionless basketball, which we've seen more and more, especially in college, where you might not need your traditional big man, but it helps when you have the big men that the Los Angeles Lakers have in LeBron James and Anthony Davis. And boy, has it been fun to watch Anthony Davis play meaningful games again. He was a monster when he was in the NCAA tournament, and then you kind of forgot about him when he went to New Orleans. He was just on some bad teams, and now to watch him back in the spotlight again has been such fun. Like, he might be one of the best true big men currently in the NBA, and it's been just a complete joy to watch him play meaningful basketball again.
I think he's kind of one of those players that might go under the radar. Like, people might not see his talent as much as they should, because you mentioned in the NCAA tournament he was a powerhouse in with the school he competed with. I believe it was Kentucky. Playing with them, then you mentioned with the Pelicans, didn't have the best of the team. He was kind of like their LeBron, just their big man they're trying to rely on. But now that he's got other people he can work with, such as Rajon Rondo, LeBron James, he's really been able to make the court his stage and kind of show people really the true value of Anthony Davis.
I just like how when you were listing Lakers, you put Rondo over LeBron. I thought that was hilarious. You're like, yeah, AD's got some superstars around him. You know, Rondo, Alex Caruso, oh, LeBron James.
That guy, yeah.
Yeah,
this
you
kid
know.
From Ohio, LeBron James. I don't know if you've
I think LeBron's got a shot at Sixth Man of the Year. He keeps up playing. Oh, my goodness. But, yeah, it'll be – Final four teams going into the conference finals. It's going to be fun to watch how the rest of this basketball season plays out.
I think so. We will see, as we mentioned, in the semifinals, slowly trying to get down to the final four. That will just about do it for our NBA playoff coverage. When we come back, we're going to head to the gridiron to talk some college football. You're listening to the Red Zone on the Pulse of Red River Nation, 103.3 WZND.
This is Brady Davis from Redbird Football, and you're listening to Red Zone on 103.3 WZMD.
Welcome back to the Red Zone here on the Pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZMD. We talked about the NBA playoffs. Now we're shifting to college football and the odd season that it is. We've got some teams playing, some teams aren't. The Redbirds and the Missouri Valley, they're not playing their conference, only they're missing it. But we still got some teams. We got the big some of the big five teams are playing. So it's been an interesting start to the college football season, but not as exciting as we hoped.
Yeah, it's been a wave of disappointment, to say the least. Not having college football like we're used to. I mean, we do have college football, but you know, watching BYU blow out Navy 55-3 on a Monday night is not exactly what I think of when I think of prime NCAA football. But it's just a tough situation for the NCAA, and I completely agree with the decision to not have football going. But, you know, it hurts because, as we'll get to, there are a lot of Redbirds who would be playing this season who are seeing transfer elsewhere. And so that's going to hurt us next season. But as for right now, I just think the smart thing to do is to be safe. And if you want to watch, you know, Memphis and Arkansas State, you can do that. But some of these bigger schools not electing to play, I think is a good call.
Yeah. And from the standpoint of like a fan, like I think we kind of, I might have overestimated how fun that first weekend games normally is, because now I look back, like week one of college football, that's normally when you got like Alabama playing like the Citadel and they beat them like 62-0. Like these aren't great games we're missing, but it just felt weird to like watching these games this weekend. Like I didn't feel like excited that college football was back. Like it just didn't feel right.
Right. Like even though you see some of the big five schools like Alabama blowing out some school you've never heard of, it is nice to see where they stand, see what kind of recruits they got in the offseason, and see where the guys that they had last season who are still on the team, see how they've developed, and just see how they've improved and how much stronger they could be this season and potentially make the run for the national championship.
And one of the things that I find most interesting about not having college football in the fall is what is this going to do to the prospect pool for the NFL draft? Because moving forward, if they do plan to have a real NCAA football season in the spring, one, we at ZND would be absolutely swamped trying to cover basketball, volleyball, and football all at the same time. But also, when you've got guys in their senior season who really put up a show, that raises their draft stock so much. Now you got a bunch of guys who are like, okay, you could either not play your senior season and not go as high in the draft, maybe not go at all in the draft, or you can play in that spring season, and then your turnaround time before you have to report to training camp for your NFL team is maybe a month. So that's an awfully tough decision for a senior or junior in college to make. Where do you want your future to go? And especially for juniors, we're going to see so many less guys forego that senior year and decide to jump to the league a year early just because all these guys are missing out on this chance to prove themselves to that higher level.
Yeah, it's definitely a risk reward type thing. Like, you almost have to think about it. Like, maybe the combine and pro days are going to carry a lot extra weight, because you think about somebody like Justin Fields from Ohio State, who's predicted to go be a top 10 pick at quarterback. Like, so there's not film of him since last January. And I find it hard to imagine, even if the Big Ten does a spring season, that he even plays, because you're going to have the NFL draft in mid-April. That's in the timeline of when the spring season's going to be going on. So I think that NFL teams are going to have to put a lot more emphasis on their scouting. There's going to be a lot limited film on these players, and you're going to have to make the most out of the few opportunities you have seen of them. And we might see a lot more sleeper picks, like guys that were late round picks end up being really good because they were under scouted in college. So I think it's going to be weird, because I don't feel like the players that think they have a shot of being drafted are going to want to play in this spring season. Like, the same goes for Trevor Lawrence. Like, do you want to risk that injury when you could just forego this season and train and then get drafted?
Yeah, we've seen with three Redbird football players in particular, they announced their intentions to transfer from Illinois State so that they can play in the fall with some of the schools to prepare themselves for a draft in April. But I think if there's going to be, I'd say, the bulk of college football move to the spring, if it still wants to go on, I'd say maybe shorten the season or move the draft to when the NHL and NBA draft are, to June. So that way you give them time to finish the season, and then them time to get ready for the combine or attend a pro day and kind of schedule themselves, so they just have time to transition and they're not like fatigued come the combine.
But the problem with that is that if you move the draft back, then you're kind of condensing that preseason schedule that NFL teams have kind of perfected over the past 20 years or so, really getting their rookies into mini camp, then getting some more guys. And it decreases the amount of time that the rookies have to get comfortable in the system, to learn the playbook, and to make the adjustment from playing in college to playing in the pros. And so when you cut down that time, you're giving a lot less opportunity for guys who may bust onto the scene and be these rookie phenoms. They're going to be a lot less comfortable playing in the NFL. And so there's just a lot of give and take, whether you have the draft early and you make these college kids have a quick turnaround, or you push the draft back, give them adequate time to recover from their season, but then they have such a limited amount of time to get prepared for their first season in the NFL. So I think regardless of the situation, it's going to have an impact on not only NCAA football, but NFL football as well heading into this next season.
Definitely. I think the two have to go hand in hand, especially with the recovery time needed for playing such a high contact sport like football. I mean, you think about it in the NFL context. So the big game, the championship, is played in early February. And then the players, that's just two teams that are playing that late into the year. They don't strap on the pads again until mid-June in their mini camps to going full contact. So then you think about the two teams that make it to the championship, that's 4 months without playing full contact football. But the teams that have been out since January, they're going 6 months without strapping on the pads and hitting another player. That allows their bodies to recover. I think if we want to, we're talking about all these different proposals for college plans, or they could be going 2 months without playing full contact football. Like, that could really, I think, result in a lot more serious injuries, as well as just that wear and tear that could affect these players longer, later into their careers, where they might not be able to play as long because they've just been so beat up.
And then, so if you're a college player and you're in that situation, which are you incentivized to do more? Because in my mind, it's a complete toss up. Do you want to not give your body that rest, or maybe take this season off, or maybe redshirt even, and then go in as a senior again? Cause like there's so much risk, like you said, Leo, with going in without without very much rest and getting hurt. And so I just, it's a total toss up.
Yeah, I think we're putting there. The situation is where you're putting college age kids in almost such an impossible situation to make the right decision. Cause it almost feels like whatever decision these athletes pick, somebody's going to tell them they made the wrong decision, that they're being selfish. So I think this might be a failure by the NCAA to come up with a plan on this transition from NCAA to NFL. Yeah. Where they're not doing the best thing possible for the long-term safety of their players.
Yeah, that's kind of the biggest thing, trying to think of the safety, because while these players do want to take the step to the next level and be one of the NFL's next greatest players, you do want their safety to be really the most important thing, especially we've seen with such a high contact sport that some of those players have had traumatic brain injuries or other injuries that have impacted them later in their career, even when they're done playing. So the NCAA is going to have a lot to think about. And you even think about revenue too. There's a lot going into these games as well. And if they're not being played, there's not going to be enough money coming in to put some of these guys on scholarships. So they could potentially lose the scholarship and try and go somewhere else. You mentioned trying to redshirt. Will they let them? We'll just have to see.
So it's just such an impossible situation, and I couldn't agree with you guys more. And I am just interested to see how this will affect the NFL play, because obviously it's going to have very instant impact on the way that the NCAA is played and who's playing and who's not. But I think moving forward into the NFL, I think if they do have the draft at the same time and have that spring season, I think Leo's absolutely right, where we're going to see a lot of injuries due to that lack of rest time. And so these players aren't going to have time to let their bodies recover from a full season.
Yeah, we'll just have to see what happens with some of them. Could anything be moved or adjusted? Could the college season be shortened? Could the combine not happen? There are a lot of, obviously, uncertainties right now facing the NCAA and trying to get their transition into the NFL. We'll see what happens. The NCAA definitely has a lot they're going to have to think about. A lot of people are trying to rely on them. A lot of questions up in the air. So we will see what happens collegiate-wise. But when we come back, we're going to shift over to the professional gridiron and talk some NFL football as they kick off their season shortly. You're listening to the Red Zone of the Pulse of Red Bird Nation, 103.3 WZND.
This is Barstool Big Cat, and you're listening to the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Welcome back to the Red Zone here on the Pulse of Red Bird Nation, 103.3 WZND. We are now joined by news and sports guest Blake Hornstein on the show. Blake, thanks for coming on.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys.
No problem. We always like having news and sports guests on the show, and each week they come up with a topic that they want to talk about. And this week, Blake, with the NFL season kicking off, fittingly, you wanted to talk about the NFL.
Absolutely.
So let's get into it. We got the defending champion, Kansas City Chiefs, coming in. They're going to open up against the Texans. It'll be shortly on Thursday Night Football. Then we got the NFC North, big controversy with the Bears on who was going to be their starting quarterback. It was finally Trubisky and the uncertainty. And then with the Packers as well, they drafted Jordan Love. So they were thinking, is Aaron Rodgers going to be our quarterback, or is it going to be Jordan?
All I'm going to say is Matt LaFleur has not come out and named a starting quarterback. So, Blake, as a Packers fan, are you a little worried about the quarterback controversy you guys have going on right now?
Well, while Matt LaFleur has not officially named a starting quarterback, he has said Jordan Love will be the third quarterback on the depth chart. So he's not even the backup right now. Just diving right into the Jordan Love, Aaron Rodgers controversy. Listen, I was disappointed by the pick, but I was not surprised because the Packers have a history of trying to have continuity and long-term success, and they felt like no receiver in the draft could give the team more than what 15 more years of a franchise quarterback could. I do question the Packers' ability to find another quarterback under this regime because they traded for DeShone Kizer 2 years ago and said, we would have taken him in the top 10 if we were picking over there, and look how that turned out. So the Packers might get burned by trying to bite off, let's just say, they got a really good team last year winning 13 games. I would have just gone all in and drafted a receiver or drafted a guy to help out with giving up 170 yards before contact in the championship game. But they think they're going to get another 15 years of a great quarterback, and there's only one Aaron Rodgers. You're never going to get another one of those.
Except for, you know, the guy who came before him. He was also okay, you know.
Getting struck twice.
Brett Favre.
So with the Packers, anybody watching, you can see me repping the Eddie Jackson number 39 Go Bears. But it's always so frustrating because they always seem to scrounge up these guys who are absolute garbage and would be on any other team and win 13 games. Like, if you look at the Packers receiving core, and I'm not just saying this as a Bears fan, I'm saying this as objective as a football fan as I can possibly be. They've got Davante Adams, and that's it. Like, they've got Valdez Scantling, St. Brown, and those are the only other two guys I can name because they've got no receivers, and somehow Aaron Rodgers is still an MVP caliber QB. And being an enemy in the NFC North, that was a mouthful. It's so, so frustrating.
And we see some of the running backs that they have as well. Aaron Jones been the one they've been relying on. You got Jamal Williams. They drafted A.J. Dillon, too, out of Boston College. So if they can get their backfield going as well, can give Rodgers something to work with, not only be dangerous through the air but through the ground as well. Alan Lazard, too, for the Packers. He's starting to have a stronger season. I know they've also got one guy, I think that came from Wisconsin Whitewater.
Jake Kumerow. Well, they cut
him. Yeah, Kumerow. Yeah,
they cut him.
Yeah. I know. Last year he had a bit of playing time, but it was someone like him. D3 school people were probably thinking, no way he's going to be pro, but had himself a bit of a chance.
Well, you're talking about what the Packers are doing, where I think we've seen it too with the Patriots, where you identify your quarterback. That's the most important position. If you hit on him there and you protect him with a strong offensive line, the receivers and the running backs, you could get away with having a series of interchangeable parts there. I mean, obviously, look at New England. They just reshuffle the deck every couple of years at receiver and running back and just built around Tom Brady. Now, he's gone, so it's going to be different here. But the Packers have kind of done that, too, where they've had their quarterback for years. They have done a good job protecting him at the offensive line position. And then, yeah, he can just get the ball to some mediocre receivers that he could sign for cheap. And then when they come up on their contracts and want to go get paid, let somebody else make a mistake on them and just find somebody else that could do their job for cheaper.
And it is – oh, sorry. Go ahead.
You're good. You know, Leo, that's a fantastic point about getting the quarterback right and working with interchangeable parts. The difference between the Packers, who haven't reached the Super Bowl in 10 years, and the Patriots, who, well – which is Super Bowl in 4 out of the last 5 years, going from 14 to 19. They're way more prepared, way more successful in their preparation and setting up Tom Brady to be, successful. And while that offensive line is great, it feels to me that the Packers are sort of relying on Aaron Rodgers to, pull wins out of his keister. While it seems like Tom's got it all set up for him. With the preparation, the game planning, and, of course, the great situational defense.
And since you're talking about franchise QBs, let's transfer over to another franchise QB in Mitchell Trubisky, just because I've been dying to talk about the Bears. I watched the 85 Bears 30 for 30 twice this week. That's how excited I am for Bears football to come back. And I wanted to ask you, Blake, as a Packers fan, are you – worried about the rest of the NFC North? Because when I look at the NFC North schedule, it's only the Packers that I see as an issue for the Bears. And so if I were a Packers fan, I'd be like, psh, that's six easy wins. I mean, well, five, because the Bears and Packers will split, but.
Yeah. You know, I try to just as an objective fan or, not objective fan, but just to try to not get myself too high on hopes. I like to respect everyone in the division. The Bears obviously have just a fantastic defense, and as long as that defense is there, they're going to be in every game, or most games rather. The Packers have a really distinct advantage over the Bears and the Vikings this year, and that they're often both the Bears and the Vikings just can't block Za'Darius Smith, Preston Smith, Kenny Clark. And that makes it so hard for a guy like Trubisky, who really needs everything to be set up for him to be successful. And same with Kirk Cousins, who gets, you know, very jittery when things aren't going well up front. So as a Packers fan, I do think that they have a really distinct advantage over the NFC North teams. But hey, you never know. The NFL changes so much year to year. I mean, hey, maybe the Bears bounce back and David Montgomery turns into a franchise running back. That changes the whole game.
And you mentioned defensive pass rush for as a big proponent of the Packers' success, and I'd have to agree, although they've got the second best pass rush in the division.
Fair enough.
But something that may make a huge difference for another NFC North team is the Vikings just placed Daniel Hunter on IR, which is huge because they thought they were going to have this two-headed monster to go against Green Bay and Chicago with Daniel Hunter and then the newly acquired Yannick Ngakoue. But now they've only got Ngakoue, and their defense is aging. Like, Harrison Smith is not the man he once was. Anthony Barr, same thing. And so I don't see the Vikings really being as much of a threat. And everywhere I look, I'm seeing like Packers 12-4, Vikings 11-5. And I just do not believe that the Vikings are going to be anywhere near as big of a threat as they were last year. And they weren't even that good last year.
The Vikings are just such a weird team to me because it feels like they've had some major playoff wins the past few seasons, but all of those have just come off of strokes of luck. And then the media just runs away with this just hype train about the Vikings. And I don't get it. They just confuse me. I don't get why there's all love for them. I think they took steps backwards. They traded their best receiver and Stephon Diggs to Buffalo, but yet still everybody's talking about like how good they're supposed to be this year. And I still don't believe in Kirk Cousins. And obviously I probably want him on the Bears, but like he's gets a lot of love from the national media and I don't get it. I think the Vikings are just going to be a weird team where they'll probably be competitive, but they might not be a contender to win the division.
Yeah. We've seen, especially last year with Delvin Cook, just lighting up the backfield for the Vikings. And then their duo of wide receivers, Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen. We've seen the way that they've been able to play, but it's just, mainly those guys. Kirk Cousins is, you know, an average quarterback trying to battle his way back into the game as he suffered that Joe Theismann-like leg injury. So we'll see what happens. But as you mentioned, it's the NFL. It could change. You know, you look a couple seasons ago, you know, no one expected the Bears to be any good. Then, you know, we get some random guy named Khalil Mack, and all of a sudden we light up.
And I think that the biggest indicator for who's going to be successful in the NFC North is who can have this balanced attack of offense and defense, because that was the Packers last year. As much as I hate to say it, the Packers defense was raw and their offense, if you have Aaron Rodgers, you're going to have a good offense. And so I don't think the Vikings are going to be able to put together a good defensive showing, and the Lions aren't good for either. So it will really, I think the division will come down to, can Mitch learn how to throw a football, and can David Montgomery carry the bulk of the weight in the backfield? Because obviously you've got Cordarrelle and Tariq Cohen back there as kind of like fun toys for Matt Nagy to throw into a play, but that's not going to replace efficient downhill running. So if the Bears can put together a good offensive season, then I think they've got a chance to really challenge the Packers for this division.
That's a lot to ask for. And it just feels like maybe I'm not too much of a pessimist, but it feels like everything I've been reading about the Bears, where people are just, the beat writers seem to think that they didn't make enough upgrades at offensive line, which struggles, which makes things way harder for Mitch. And then the David Montgomery injury worries me too, because then if he's hurt, you don't have a traditional running back then, because Tariq Cohen, Nagy doesn't really like using him as a north-south back, and Cordarrelle Patterson's more of a gadget player. So I think the Bears might have to be a little more creative than they were originally anticipating this week against the Lions.
As much as I've been reading, though, I think Demo is going to be healthy. They had him limited practice today. Same with Khalil Mack, who is also limited, Javon Wims, so some other key pieces for the Bears. But I think that from what I've been reading, it looks like Montgomery will get the start against the Lions. So fingers crossed there, because you're absolutely right. Without David Montgomery in there, they've got, like, I couldn't even tell you who's next on the depth chart, who's a traditional running back.
I'll add one last thing. Mitchell Trubisky has a winning record as a starting quarterback.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And that's the Packers fan talking. That is objective stats right there.
Just saying.
Mitch is our quarterback.
That's what people seem to neglect.
He's a good player.
Like, you look at last season where everything went wrong for the Bears, and they still went 8-8, and they probably won a couple games they shouldn't have there. Like, this, I feel like the sky isn't falling to the extent they just jump to conclusions with them, where they were a decent team last year. So I think it is realistic to expect, with an easier schedule this year, they should make improvements.
Could not agree more.
Well, we will have to see what happens. As we mentioned, there was that quarterback controversy with the Bears. Is it Mitch Trubisky, who Scott Rosala thinks could be MVP this year?
Oh, God. You got to love Scotty.
Or is it going to be Nick Foles, which is our red zone question of the week? Who do you think should be the Bears starting quarterback?
We saw
Matt Nagy say his decision with Trubisky, but who do you think it's going to be? Or do you think should be, excuse me, Nick Foles or Mitch Trubisky? That'll just about wrap it up. But when we come back, it is the moment you have all been waiting for. You're listening to the Red Zone on the Pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZND.
Hi, this is Paul DeYoung, former ISU Redbird, current St. Louis Cardinal. You're listening to Red Zone on WZND.
Welcome back to the Red Zone. It is the moment we have all been waiting for. It's been way too long. It's the pick six.
Let's go. I'm so excited. Oh, man. I'm just so excited for football to be back. Oh, and the weather this week, we've had like 60 degrees. Oh, my God. Nothing screams football more than a day 60 degrees or under.
Gotta We're getting say, closer and closer to bear weather.
It is. Yeah, bear down. We will see what happens with the Bears. But for those that are unaware how pick six works, we pick six NFL games. They are predetermined games, and we all go around and predict the winner of the games. It's like three up, three down, but instead of choosing our own games, we have just six normal games. So we'll pick them. And we'll see the record. We'll compete against each other. Now the guest, it's got to be only up from here because they've had a reputation of not performing well in pick six. So,
I trust you though, Blake. I trust you.
Yeah, this is going to set the standard.
Heads, you're going the right direction.
Without further ado, let's get going. Our first game is the Kansas City Chiefs against the Houston Texans. That is going to kick off shortly tonight. It is Kansas City's favorite, 77%. I'm going Kansas City.
I am also going to have to go Kansas City. This feels like a very easy week one for Patrick Mahomes and company, especially the Texans, who do not have DeAndre Hopkins. This is going to be a walk in the park for the Chiefs.
This is going to be a fun matchup for me. You got two of the three quarterbacks drafted in the first round of 2017. Don't forget, all three of them have been Pro Bowlers in their career. Don't forget that stat.
But I have to go with
Pat Mahomes and the defending champion Kansas City Chiefs. Again, great quarterback draft class. Like, it's like the Elway Marino class. So many good players picked.
Three Pro Bowlers in the top 10, all QBs. What are the odds?
Imagine drafting Nate Peterman in that class.
Keep milking it, boys. Well, I'm actually going to go with the Houston Texans. What people are forgetting that the Texans actually won in Kansas City last year and then had a 24-0 lead in the playoffs. Now, then Bill O'Brien happened. Everyone's been raking him this offseason, trading DeAndre Hopkins for a second-round pick and then overpaying Randall Cobb and then trading for Brandon Cooks. The Texans are going to go into Kansas City, and the Chiefs may not have a hangover, but they're going to start up the year 0-1.
Wow, okay, so it looks like the guest will also start out 0-1.
That's bold. Steve Cease, our faculty advisor, he is going with the Chiefs as well. The second game, it's our favorite game. Chicago Bears against the Detroit Lions. I'm going Chicago.
Thank God. I think everybody in their right mind, so that's everybody on the show, and then excluding Steve Cease, should pick the Chicago Bears here. The Lions have nothing, and this is going to be an easy dub for the Bears.
Easy dub.
Yeah, I feel like the Bears have just had great luck against the Lions the past 2 years, which is funny because it seems like it's the Lions fans that want to talk the most smack about the Bears while they've kind of had their number. So I think this should be a big statement win. It's not going to be easy. I'm predicting it's going to be a close game, but I think the Bears will sneak out of there with a win.
I'm going to throw a stat at you guys. So Matthew Stafford played 8 games last year. He had 19 touchdown passes. If you take that number and multiply it by 2, he leads the NFL in touchdown passes. Detroit got really unlucky last year against the Packers in that Monday night game. They really were going to make a push for the playoffs. Then Stafford got hurt. They're going to start the season off 1-0. The Lions are not a bad team. They're going to win this game.
I can't believe the guest is going 0-2 to start the year. Blake, I talked you up so much before this. What are we doing?
Win the games, Joey.
Hey, I mean, all I'm saying is you're playing the strat. So if we're wrong, guest is far and away number one right now.
Game plan.
Yeah, as far as Steve Cease goes, I'd be lying to you if I told you he didn't pick Detroit. He's going with the Lions. Third game, sticking with the NFC North, the Green Bay Packers and the Minnesota Vikings. Blake, I'm sorry to do this to you, but I really want to try and go 6-0. I'm going Minnesota.
Blake, I'm also really trying to go 6-0, so I'm going to make the obviously right choice, and I'm going to pick Green Bay. They're going to run over Minnesota.
Yeah, I got your back, too, on this, Blake. In the previous segment, I basically, dismantled the Minnesota Vikings. I don't believe in them, and it's hard to win in Lambeau any time of the year, especially early in the year. I think Aaron Rodgers and company are going to have a very favorable matchup in week one,
yes,
as much as I hate to say that.
Well, I brought up earlier how I'm really a huge fan of our matchup with our defensive linemen, Smith, Clark, and other Smith. Went up against the Vikings and the Bears. The other factor in that game is the Vikings' relatively young secondary. I mean, they don't have anybody out there that's played Aaron Rodgers before. The Packers are going to dismantle the Vikings on Sunday. I think that this is going to be 34-17. I'm going. Packers 1-0.
And I'm glad you brought up other Smith. That's my favorite play in the NFL right now.
You must say the Smith brothers for us this show.
Thank you.
Steve, also going with the Vikings. Really anything can happen. We'll see. Next game, we're moving to Sunday Night Football. Dallas Cowboys, Los Angeles Rams. I got Mr. Prescott on my fantasy team. I need him to step up. I'm going Dally.
And Freddie, I also have Dak Prescott on my fantasy team. And I think that the Cowboys are the easy victors here. Not a whole lot going on in Los Angeles. The extension of Jalen Ramsey, which I think they paid a little too much because they should be entering a mini rebuild here. So I think that it's going to be Cowboys all day.
I'm going to have to go against the grain here, guys. I feel like the Los Angeles Rams, 2 years ago, we saw them make it all the way to the championship, their high-flying offense. Obviously, a lot's changed. I think people have forgotten, though, when Sean McVay gets going into a groove, he could be a good coach. And I feel like the Cowboys, especially under Mike McCarthy, his teams don't always get off to the good start. I think this could be a close game, and I got to go with the Rams here.
Yeah, Leo, as much as I agree with you on the Mike McCarthy points, you know what? Dallas had a huge dark cloud lifted over their franchise this offseason in firing Jason Garrett, which they should have done a long time ago. I think that Dallas is going to roll L.A. this upcoming. I think they're going to – honestly, this might sound like kind of a cheesy point. I think they just want to ruin the opening of the new stadium. And they've just got so much talent on the outside with a guy like CeeDee Lamb, adding him in the draft, that great offensive line. I like Dallas in a close one.
Steve, sticking with Leo, he's taking the Rams. So we'll see if Dallas can spoil their spoil their introduction. Final two games, moving to Monday Night Football. First one, Pittsburgh against the New York Football Giants. My opinion, not too entertaining, but I think Pittsburgh will take this one.
Freddie, I couldn't disagree with you more. This is an absolute barn burner of a game to open Monday Night Football. But, yeah, I think Big Ben coming back is going to be huge for the Steelers. However, I got a lot of faith in Daniel Jones. Saquon is an animal. Oh, you know what? I'm changing my pick of the last second. Pittsburgh's defense is too good. We're going Steelers.
I'm also going with the Steelers here. I just feel like Mike Tomlin is a very good coach, and they had a dysfunctional year last year. I think now getting Big Ben and his surgically repaired arm back, they were able to get some sense of normalcy back in their training camp, go back in with their full group with James Conner and Juju Schuster leading the offense too. I think that's going to be a good week one matchup with the veteran Pittsburgh Steelers going against an up-and-coming New York Giants.
Joey, I'm with you, man. The Giants offense could really take off this year. I'm a huge Daniel Jones guy. I've heard a lot of good things about what Joe Judge has done in training camp, changing that culture. Pat Shurmur's not a head coach. Neither was Ben McAdoo. I think push for the East this year, but Pittsburgh almost made the playoffs last year with a guy named Duck. They're an exceptional team, and now they're getting Ben Roethlisberger back. You're going to see the rise of Juju Smith-Schuster again. James Conner is a good running back despite last year. Pittsburgh's just too good. They're going to win.
Steve Cease also picking Pittsburgh, so I believe that's a clean sweep. Final game is the Tennessee Titans and the Denver Broncos. This is an interesting game. I had one person. I might change my pick.
Ooh.
I initially had Tennessee. But I'm thinking with Dallas, the way they're going, yes, they've lost Von Miller. They do have some defense. Still have some defensive guys. We got Harris times two from ISU on their team. Jerry Jeudy, excited to see what he's got. Drew Locke, see what he's got under his sleeve. So I'm going to go Denver.
Very interesting, Mr. Ferretti. I also had a tough time deciding on this game because Tennessee has been very good over the past couple of years, and especially last year. And so I was having a tough time deciding, do I really think Ryan Tannehill is going to be legit, and is he going to be able to carry this team? And while I don't know if that's if he will be able to or not, I think that Derrick Henry is going to exploit the youth and the injuredness, I guess, of the Broncos defense. And he's just a freight train. You can't stop him. So this is going to be a close one, I think, but I think Tennessee's going to pull it out.
Yeah, I think the Von Miller injury definitely has impacted my pick because I just think Derrick Henry is one of the – we saw he could be unstoppable at times when he gets running, and when you put a young defense up against him and you throw in that Von Miller injury, that kind of throws a wrench into whatever Denver had planned. So I think that's going to be a little bit too much to overcome. I don't believe in Ryan Tannehill as a starter, but he's their guy, so he's there, so – through gritted teeth, I'm going with Tennessee. I think it might not be pretty, but I think they will get the win in this matchup.
Steve is also going with Tennessee. So that will just about do it for our... Oh, Blake, yes.
Wow.
I was getting ready to say something, Anthony.
Freddie's doing everything he can to prevent to fudge Blake's numbers.
Anyways, so, you know, I know that, you know, every year we get on a hype train. Well, I'm getting on my hype horse. Denver's going to have the MVP this year. Drew Lock is going to break out. KJ Hamler, Jerry Jeudy, Cortland Sutton, Noah Fant, Phillip Lindsay, Melvin Gordon. This offense is loaded. Drew Lock is going to break out this year. This Denver team is going to be a top two seed in the AFC. And just going into this week, you know, you guys aren't – I don't think you guys are giving Denver's defense enough credit. They did add Jarrell Casey. They did add A.J. Boye. Bradley Chubb is, you know, going to be a future DPOY at some point. I got Denver winning this game. Tennessee's good, and I think they'll push for the playoffs again at 9-7 like they do every year. But Denver's winning week one.
Let's not brush past the fact that our very own Blake Hornstein just declared Drew Lock MVP. Let's all keep that in the back of our minds.
That's a bold strategy, Cotton.
Bold prediction.
Back of our minds, and then week 17 rolls around. Blake, we're going to have you on again, and we're going to see if you still feel the same way.
Sounds good to me.
I like it, Blake. You got to just go out on a limb. I like it. I like the gutsy pick.
Steve is going with Tennessee. Glad you are sticking with Denver. At least we got two people going. I mean, we'll see what happens. It's going to be the first week. Who knows with all these rookies and all this time they've had off, because usually they've got preseason to prepare. So we'll just see what happens. Who's going 6-0? Who's going 0-6? Who knows? But now that'll just about do it for our coverage for this week on the Red Zone. Fingers crossed, though, that next week we will be back in studio on Thursday night at 6, where you can tune in where you always are, 103.3 WZND. Just to recap what we have talked about, we opened up or tipped off the show, I should say, with the NBA playoffs. Then we moved to the gridiron for the remainder of the show, talked some college football. Then we had news and sports guest Blake Hornstein on the show talking the NFL previewing this unique 2020 season. And then we finished off with the best picking game in sports talk show history, the Pick Six. That'll just about do it. Don't forget to follow us on all our platforms at 103.3 WZND and at WZND Sports. That'll just about do it for our coverage. For everyone here at WZND saying so long. You've been listening to the Red Zone on Pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZND.